Laugh Lines, my life helping funny people be funnier. I write. This is what I'm wired to do. To awaken at 5:30 every morning, sit down with my vocabulary, choose words, and arrange them in an order that will not only hold a viewer or reader's interest, but also afford them a laugh or two along the way. And if I succeed, well, mission accomplished. There's no greater feeling. But if I fail, well, I'm sorry. But it's not a war crime, I swear. I tried my best. That's a good opening to today's book, Laugh Lines, by Alan Zweibel, and deservedly so. The author's life crosses two critical modern entertainment epochs. From the 1960s Catskills-drenched comedy clubs, when making it in the live, in-person venues of Upper New York State or Las Vegas was the ultimate goal and quite lucrative goal of many comics and comic writers. Zweibel's career then arced deeply into the explosion of TV comedy that was and still beams into our homes. He wrote for the original Saturday Night Live, accompanied his employer, Gary Shandling, to hosting gigs on The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson, and finds himself today working on an indie film with longtime friend and cohort, Billy Crystal. So let's begin at the beginning. Back in those tumultuous years of the 1960s and 1970s, when his tales of working with still-thriving Catskill Club comics who knew their audience's funny bones were not always what a 20-something comic writer wanted to write jokes about. Getting a foothold in the world of comedy, we join Zweibel as he gives us a peek behind the fabled curtains. He works his way into working with such popular and often groundbreaking television shows as It's the Gary Shandling Show, the early groundbreaking years of Saturday Night Live, of Curb Your Enthusiasm, and a couple of films that are, well, better left unnoticed, though here later in this review. The name-dropping by this oracle of jokes is non-stop. And surprisingly, for how we often find such talk, much more fun than annoying. Anecdotes about the comics Zweibel wrote for, partied with, broke and shared an occasional bread with, are funny, joyful, and grandly page-turning. From those early arguments as a young writer with the middle-aged comics of the Catskills, through his years writing with contemporaries like Billy Crystal, Dan Aykroyd, Gilda Radner, among others, working with and learning from Rob Reiner, and of all things, a Frank Sinatra cameo inspired by his three-year-old daughter. Each and every name-dropped anecdote all ring with truth, Arner expressed with a wink-wink sarcasm that was so much more funny than harsh. Throw in moments by Dave Barry, Lorne Michaels, Paul Simon, Jason Sudeikis, The Dick Van Dyke Show. Oh my gosh, it runs on and on and on, and not a boring moment to be found. I mentioned that Frank Sinatra cameo. Well, here it is from the book. Give you an idea of the fun Zweibel provides us in these pages. As he tells us, he's just moved with his family to Los Angeles after commuting back and forth between East and West Coasts as he was working on It's the Gary Shandling Show. Well, finally, he gets a gig that can keep him in L.A. for quite a while. So he moves the entire crew out to L.A. with him. And as he writes, it took a while to adjust, although the family got us Los Angeles introduction from the very first night we were there. Robin, my wife, and I took the kids to dinner at an Italian restaurant in Westwood called Mateo's. That was often frequented by the likes of Dean Martin, Sammy Davis Jr., and other members of the famed Rat Pack. We found a booth not too far from the bar and ordered. And while waiting for the food to come, Lindsay, who was 3 years old, started misbehaving. Kicking her brother Adam. Not sitting still. Throwing bread. And despite repeated admonitions, she persisted until I issued a final warning that if she didn't calm down, she would be sent away from the table. She acted out again, and I told her, I've had it. You are to stand in that corner and not come back until you can sit there like a big girl. Lindsay left the table just as the waiter came with our first course. I put my head down for a second to taste the soup, when I heard the voice of an older man saying, "This young lady says you're giving her a hard time." I looked up and saw Frank Sinatra holding Lindsay's hand. Although I'd never met him, I said, "Mr. Sinatra, please listen to my side of the story." And I proceeded to inform him of Lindsay's behavior. Sinatra then asked, "Is that true, Lindsay?" And when she sheepishly nodded, Sinatra asked her to apologize, hug her dad, and retake her seat, and told us to enjoy our meal before he headed back to the bar. There are so many more. So I bell as a comic, to be sure. We're surprised on each page by his turn of a phrase, his witty observation of this or that experience. But he is also surprisingly frank about his successes. There are many. Praising not only his own talent, but sharing it with the others in his craft with whom he worked. And he can be wonderfully self-critical as well. An honesty that gives Laugh Lines the credibility that a full-blown tell-all so definitely needs. And so when Zweibel shares the devastating failure of writing that drove him to self-imposed isolation after the runaway success of It's the Gary Shandling Show and his work with Saturday Night Live, he is as upstanding in his memory as he is with his successes. In brief, Zweibel was invited to write a romantic comedy for two hugely popular stars of the big and small screen, stars who, he tells us, he was less than excited about writing for. His gut told him those two just weren't the romantic comedy types. And how right he was. The TV show he helped craft flopped hugely. But fate was kind. Zweibel was soon enough hired to interpret a comic novel he had written years ago, titled North, the tale of a 9-year-old boy who becomes a free agent and travels the world in search of perfect parents. Sounds like a great premise, doesn't it? For the big screen. Yet despite great funding, a wildly talented director and cast, and hard work by all involved, North, the movie, was a monumental flop. And some years distant, Zweibel puts a comic spin on even this professional tragedy. As he tells us, North, the book, was inspired by our son Adam, who was at that age when he would look at me and my wife Robin while we were all sitting at the dinner table, and from the expression on his face, it was easy to tell that he was thinking, "I can do better than these two." A writer's dream. To be hired to adapt your own book into a screenplay. Given Rob Reiner's track record, I had every reason to believe that the movie would be a good chance of being a hit. And heavens knew that after Good Sports, I was in dire need of redemption. Rob and I did dozens of rewrites together, going over every beat and every line time again and again to make sure the script was as good as it could possibly be to attract the best possible cast. It worked. And once production began, I got the same feeling I'd had when we first started Saturday Night Live. Something I'd written was being taken seriously. People woke up early. Sets were being built. Big, burly men were carrying long planks of wood. Other men, not quite as big and burly, were standing atop scissor lifts, aligning Klieg lights. There were catering trucks, wind machines, extras wearing makeup. There were painters. Wardrobe women hurriedly walking, holding three different choices of cowboy hats. People whom I had no idea what their jobs were talking into walkie-talkies. Hopes were lofty. The actors were happy. The rewrites I was doing on the second set seemed right. And enthusiasm among the crew, even the most jaded veterans, was palpable. But the moment the final cut was shown to people who weren't related to it, it was a different story. Test audiences who came to the screenings excited to see Rob Reiner's new movie exited, somewhat stunned. Not only given the film's scores that implied they wouldn't recommend it to friends, but also demanding we return the 91 minutes of their lives they'd wasted watching it. Some new scenes were written and then shot. Some existing scenes were rewritten and then reshot. I kept our 60 collective fingers crossed with every hope that we'd not only salvage the movie, but that it would actually be embraced by a mass audience. The premiere? Well, the reaction at even our house gave further indication that North was not destined for the classic status that Rob and I had envisioned. Any shred of hope I had that I might be spared public humiliation was dashed the following morning when the premier film critic in the country, Roger Ebert, was somewhat less than enthusiastic in his assessment of my baby. At the time, Roger's syndicated television show At the Movies with fellow film critic Gene Siskel was highly rated, and the thumbs-up opinions were sure to be boasted in all print advertisements, while a thumbs-down verdict was tantamount to a box office death sentence. For those of you who don't recall Roger Ebert's published review of North, or didn't carry an original clipping of it in your wallet until it yellowed and became brittle and disintegrated with age, so you replaced it with an internet copy printed on heavier stock, as I did, here is an excerpt. I hated this movie. Hated this movie. Hated every simpering, stupid, vacant, audience-insulting moment of it. Hated the sensibility that anyone thought would like it. Hated the implied insult to the audience by its belief that anyone would be entertained by it. Now, because I have a tendency to be a tad hard on myself, Zweibel writes, I took the time to reread it, slower this time, looking for a hidden adjective, or perhaps the phrase, I'm just kidding, that I had somehow overlooked the first 25 times I read it. But no, there was no getting around it. There was something about North that apparently rubbed Roger Ebert the wrong way. To say the least, Ebert's review was embarrassing and hurtful, and my guess was there was no way that other Alan Zweibel was even coming close to getting laid by anyone literate enough to have read that review. Don't get me wrong. Roger had every right to dislike or even hate this movie. It was his job to give his opinion. And he was a good writer, so maybe part of the reason it bothered me so much was that a fellow wordsmith had been so personally negative about how I defined myself. To be fair, this was not the only negative review that the film received. There were a number of them. Okay, I'm lying again. There was a veritable avalanche of them. But because that review was written by Roger Ebert, it was the one that everyone on the planet read and quoted. It has a happy ending. Later on, the conclusion of that chapter, the author of North meets the critic in a restroom of all places. The two get a laugh out of what had been written so very long ago. And the chapter concludes in kind of an upbeat way. A moment that I broke by saying, Zweibel writes, and I just have to tell you, Roger, that I hate that sweater you're wearing. One last beat of silence. Then I smiled, and then he smiled. Then I started laughing, and he started laughing, and then we shook hands. That was the last time I saw Roger Ebert, who passed away in 2013. I'm happy he and I met that day. Rest in peace, Roger. Yes, Zweibel is a man of his times, as a comic probably must be. He must pick up on themes and cultural notes of his time to poke fun and call out the oddities and weirdness that make us laugh at ourselves as much as at others. So it is that Zweibel shares moments of family bliss and discord, some of those we heard, marital and parental moments around which the time frame of this memoir revolves. Let's take special note of Zweibel's friendship with the late Gilda Radner, a friendship that began on the set of Saturday Night Live and that many years, and adventures later, helped to pull him out of his funk brought down on him by his North Goes South writing disaster, and, as life will, gave him and us an open-eyed, ultimately sweet memory of the comic who brought so much fun and laughter into our lives. Check out Zweibel's Bunny Bunny, his memory of Gilda Radner, if you would like to read a sweet, heartfelt tribute to Gilda Radner, a woman Zweibel came to call a dear friend as well as a colleague. Final note, Laugh Lines is introduced by Billy Crystal,
who rose to national comic fame as the world of comedy was migrating from in-person comedy clubs to in-home TV and movies. And in their early years, they co-wrote and did stand-up comedy together. As Alan Zweibel gives Billy Crystal the first lines of his book, let's now give that famous critic and comedian the last word of this review. This is Billy Crystal, writing about his friend and fellow comedian, Alan Zweibel. He is in some ways not your typical Jewish comedy writer. First off, he's over 5'7". He doesn't smoke or drink, looks bad in baseball hats, will buy retail, and is now vegan, but does like his carrots lean. He is also a great person, a unique friend, and a loving husband, father, and grandpa. I don't know of anyone who doesn't have a kind thing to say about Alan, except Alan. If life were a 40s movie, Alan would be called a big lug. He is a large man with a sensitive persona and a heart of gold. His instincts about people and humanity are why I asked him to work with me on 700 Sundays, that famous movie. Sharing my life's journey, my joys and sorrows, was the task at hand. I'd been thinking about a one-man Broadway show that would confront my complex relationship with my late father. I thought if I could discuss my grief and still have it be funny and moving, it could be special. I had a 4-page outline for the play, as this was not an evening of stand-up, but rather a 2-act play that had me reliving funny and painful moments, as well as portraying a myriad of relatives and characters, including my late parents. I trusted Alan with them. He will bring you his perspective of the experience in chapter 10, but I will tell you that he became a brother to me. Able to confide in and trust and laugh with Alan as we created not just a Tony Award-winning show, but a moving and important healing experience for children of all ages is one of the great highlights of my life. I was 26 when we first met. He was 24. I'm now 71 and he's 69, and I'm writing this in the midst of pre-production on Here Today, a film we wrote together that I'm going to not only star in but direct as well, and Alan and I are going to produce. So there. Laugh Lines, My Life, Helping Funny People Be Funnier by Alan Zweibel. It is quite a read. I hope you take a moment, pick it up, give it a chance in your own time. It's available, is Lifelines, at all of our local fine public libraries, including, of course, the West Lafayette Public Library. Thank you for listening. Enjoy the book.